All right, welcome back everyone to the Deep Dive. You know, today we're going to be doing a really fascinating deep dive into this legal case, United States v. Hoskins.
Yeah.
And it's not just any case. I mean, this is a pretty landmark decision, I think, you know, when it comes to international actors and how far the FCPA can reach, you know, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. So for anyone who's kind of working in international business, you know, following legal developments in white collar crime, I think this is a case we really should understand.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you said it best. It's a landmark decision. And really at the heart of this is like a fundamental question. How far can U.S. law kind of extend its reach beyond its borders, right?
Right.
And specifically, can the U.S. prosecute a foreign citizen for violating the FCPA if they've never even stepped foot in the U.S. Yeah. or worked directly for an American company?
Right, right. So that's what we're going to try to unpack today.
Exactly.
And at the center of this is Lawrence Hoskins, who's a U.K. citizen. Mm-hmm. And he was working for a French subsidiary of Alstom. Yeah. I think a lot of people might know that name. You know, a multinational giant. Mm. And the DOJ, the Department of Justice, was saying that he was involved in this bribery scheme to bribe Indonesian officials to get this massive $118 million contract.
Little Terahan Project, I think it was called.
That's Terahan Project, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, it's interesting. What immediately struck me when I was reading this was just how distant Hoskins seems from the United States. I mean, not a U.S. citizen. He wasn't directly employed by, you know, Alstom's U.S. subsidiary.
Right.
Which is Alstom Power Inc.,
right.
API. And he never even entered the U.S. during all of this, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, how did the U.S. get involved?
That's the first question everyone has, right? What was the basis for the U.S. to even have jurisdiction?
Exactly, exactly. So let's, you know, unpack the DOJ's arguments here. I mean, what were they alleging?
Well, so they were alleging that Hoskins played a really instrumental role in this whole bribery scheme,
yeah.
specifically that he was the one or one of the people who approved these payments to consultants, knowing full well that this money was going to be funneled to Indonesian officials.
Right, right.
You know, and the goal was obviously to secure that power contract for Alstom. You know, $118 million is not chump change.
Right, it's a big deal, yeah.
And so their core argument was that even though Hoskins wasn't directly an employee of API, the U.S. arm, he was conspiring with them.
Okay.
To violate the FCPA. And that conspiracy was their link, right? That provided the link to U.S. law.
Okay, okay. And, you know, it's important to remember here that Hoskins wasn't on API's payroll.
Right.
It's not like they could just point to employment.
Yeah.
So the government had to jump over, like, kind of a lot of hurdles here legally, right?
Yeah, big time.
With this idea of extraterritoriality and agency, I think.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, extraterritoriality, as you said, is basically applying U.S. law to things that happen outside the U.S., right?
Right, right.
And so the FCPA, it's pretty specific. It applies to certain categories of people and entities, right? So U.S. persons, companies listed on U.S. stock exchanges.
Oh, issuers.
Issuers, yeah. And then U.S.-based businesses, what they call domestic concerns.
Right.
And then importantly, the agents of those domestic concerns.
Right.
And so Hoskins clearly didn't fit into those first three buckets, right?
Right.
He wasn't a U.S. citizen, wasn't working directly for a U.S. company. And so the government's case was really resting on these two arguments, right? One was agency, that he was acting as an agent of API, which is a U.S. company, so a domestic concern.
Okay.
And then two, that he was conspiring with API to violate the FCPA.
Okay, so API being a domestic concern really made that agency argument, like, essential.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that's the linchpin of their case, right?
Right, right. And then the case, you know, it goes through the courts. And the district court actually had a really significant initial ruling, right?
Yeah, they did. You know, they kind of threw a curveball at the DOJ right out of the gate. What they did was they dismissed the conspiracy charge against Hoskins.
Oh, wow.
Unless the DOJ could actually prove that he was acting as an agent of API. So they're basically saying, look, you can't just use this broad idea of conspiracy to kind of get around the FCPA's specific definitions of who can be held liable, right?
Right.
It was a big deal because it really highlighted how the FCPA is kind of deliberately limited in its reach, right?
Yeah.
You can't just redraw the boundaries with these conspiracy charges.
And this is where it gets really interesting because then the case goes to trial.
Yeah.
And the jury convicts Hoskins.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, okay, maybe the DOJ is going to get this win.
Looks like it. Yeah.
But then the trial judge steps in
right.
and overturns the conviction. So I'm kind of mm-hmm. curious, What was the judge's reasoning there? Why did they do that?
Yeah, so the judge basically said that there wasn't enough evidence presented at trial to actually show that API controlled Hoskins' actions.
Okay.
And that control, that element of control, is absolutely key to establishing a legal agency relationship, right?
Right.
It's not just about working together. It's about, you know, who's really calling the shots,
right.
Who's giving the directions. And this is really important because it really shows how foreign actors can actually be shielded from FCPA prosecution, right?
Right.
Just because you're cooperating, it doesn't mean you're an agent.
Right. So that decision was appealed, I think, right?
Yes, absolutely.
To the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. So let's talk about that. What did they end up doing?
Yeah, so they ended up agreeing with the district court's decision to overturn the conviction. And their reasoning was, I think, pretty important because it really emphasizes how the FCPA is intentionally limited in its reach.
Right.
And they highlighted two main points, right? One is that the actual language of the FCPA shows that Congress, when they wrote it, they meant to limit who it applies to.
Okay.
And they even said, quote, Congress deliberately delimited liability to avoid diplomatic difficulties.
I see. Yeah. It's like you can kind of imagine, you know, if the U.S. starts going after some, you know, mid-level manager in a foreign company.
Right.
For stuff they did completely on foreign soil, it could create a lot of international issues.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can bet there'd be some angry phone calls.
Yeah, for sure.
And so that was the first reason. The second one is that they went back to this issue of agency. Right. And they were really clear that just because Hoskins and API were cooperating, that doesn't automatically mean there's an agency relationship.
Right. Right.
They said, you know, agency requires that the principal, in this case API, actually has control over the agent.
Right.
And their words were really striking. They said, quote, cooperation isn't control.
So when we're talking about control in this context, what does that actually mean? I mean, it's clearly more than just working on the same project.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. So in this context, control means that API would have had the right to actually tell Hoskins what to do, you know, to dictate his actions, how he did things.
Right.
And importantly, if he didn't follow their instructions, they could punish him or even fire him.
Right.
So it's not just like, hey, we're both working on the same project. It's like, I'm your boss. You have to do what I say.
Right, right. So like, could API say, okay, Hoskins, these are your tasks for the day on the Terahan project, and if you don't do them, we can sanction you.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the level of control we're talking about.
Okay. Okay. And the court was basically saying that that wasn't really the case here, right?
Right. While there were definitely API employees kind of leading the overall Terahan project, Hoskins was working for this French subsidiary.
Right.
And he was more of a collaborator. There wasn't enough evidence that API had that direct controlling authority over his actions.
Right. So that really limits when the U.S. can go after foreign nationals under the FCPA.
Yeah. It really sets a high bar.
Now, I also wanted to ask about this thing I kept seeing, the Jabardi principle. Can you kind of explain what that is and how it plays into the Hoskins ruling?
Sure, yeah. So the Jabardi principle comes from a Supreme Court case, Jabardi v. United States. And basically it says that if a law specifically excludes a certain group from liability for something, prosecutors can't just use conspiracy charges to get around that exclusion.
Okay, yeah, I see how that connects. Because Congress specifically said in the FCPA who can be held liable, right?
Right.
U.S. persons, issuers, domestic concerns, and their agents.
Yeah.
So the DOJ couldn't just try to use conspiracy laws to pull Hoskins in.
Exactly, yeah. Because he was a non-resident foreign national.
Right.
And they hadn't proven that he was acting as an agent within the U.S.
Right, right. So basically the Hoskins case is saying that the FCPA has these boundaries and you can't just redraw them with conspiracy charges.
Exactly. It reinforces what the district court said earlier, right?
Right, right. Okay. So what are the like big takeaways here for our listeners?
Well, I think the most important thing is that the DOJ can't just prosecute anyone they want under the FCPA, especially when it comes to foreign nationals.
Right.
They have to show that there was an actual agency relationship with a U.S. company.
And to be clear, agency here doesn't just mean you worked with someone.
Right? No, definitely not. Yeah. It means that the U.S. company had real control over what the foreign national was doing.
Right. Okay.
Another key takeaway is that the courts are going to look really closely at the language of a law and what Congress intended when they wrote it.
Right.
They're not just going to rubber stamp whatever interpretation the DOJ is pushing.
And that's really important in these international white collar crime cases, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because it kind of sets some boundaries for how far the U.S. can reach.
Exactly. It's like a jurisdictional guardrail, you know?
Okay. Yeah, I see. And what about for like companies that are operating all over the world?
I think for multinational corporations, this case really highlights how important it is to understand what kind of relationships they have with foreign individuals and entities.
Okay.
Like if you're working with someone overseas, is that actually an agency relationship? Does the U.S. entity have control over what they're doing?
Right, right.
These are questions companies need to be asking themselves to really understand their FCPA risks.
Okay, yeah. So to wrap things up, I mean, it seems like United States v. Hoskins really clarified what the FCPA can and can't do. It basically said that non-resident foreign nationals can't be held liable for conspiracy or aiding and abetting under the FCPA unless the DOJ can prove they were actually acting as agents for a U.S. company.
Yeah, and that agency relationship has to involve actual control, not just some kind of loose collaboration.
Right, right.
Or, you know, unless their actions took place in the U.S. itself.
Yeah.
But yeah, you summarized it well.
So I think for any law students out there, I mean, this case is a great example of how important it is to understand the specifics of a law and what Congress was trying to do.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a great lesson in statutory interpretation.
And it also shows how the courts can act as a check on, you know, prosecutorial overreach.
Yeah, that's a really important point.
So yeah, definitely something to think about. And I think, you know, given how interconnected the world is these days, it raises some interesting questions about how these kinds of anti-corruption efforts are going to play out in the future.
Yeah, it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. It was really great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a great conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll see everyone next time on The Deep Dive.